What's good? I am back live from Vietnam. Another live from Vietnam Friday. We got some crazy weather out there. We got the ice rain coming down right now. And, we got a special guest on tonight. This guy is actually from, like, I guess you could say the mid-80s. From what I've gathered, he's one of the dopest DJs to ever get on the turntables. And doing my research, he definitely has had a life that is nothing short of dramatic. I could tell you that much. Let's bring on the one and only DJ Too Tough. Too Tough, how you doing, man?
What's good, fam? Trying to get my little camera area set up right here.
How's your weather out there?
Oh, I just got done a little 3 inches. It's all right, though. It's kind of cool. My son built an igloo today.
Oh, that's what's up.
In the schoolyard, so we still holding the snow down, but it's not currently snowing. But it's good. It's good to be on here, good bro.
So I want to start with like a basic question at first. Like, what inspired you to get into the turntables DJing?
Well, I seen a TV show called Graffiti Rock back in the day. Just happened to catch it one night. I saw Jam Master Jay scratching on there with 1,200 turntables, and I had a friend. His name is Anthony Ray. He lived a couple blocks past where my mom told me I shouldn't go that far. But I went that far anyway, and I ended up running to a person who would pass me this incredible gift. He taught me who Cash Money was, who Jazzy Jeff was, who Lightning Rich was. And these people were all like pioneer Philly DJs on the scratch circuit. Turntablism before it had the, you know, the title turntablism, I guess you could say. Okay. And the way that I learned how to scratch was because my man Yo-Yo, he was a DJ as well, and he taught me everything about who these people were and to how to do the fader movements, how to move the record fast or slow, you know, what a spin pad was, what kind of needles I needed to get so the record wouldn't jump when I was scratching. And he cut with both turntables on the left-hand side, and we only had one mixer. So I ended up cutting with both tables on the right-hand side in a battle position. So this is, the year is about 85, you know? I got real good real quick. And by 87, I had recorded scratches on a song called My Part of Town by Tough Crew.
Yeah.
And the rest is kind of like, you know, 35 years later, those air scratches, people been doing those air scratches all over the world. And it's just it's a pleasure, you know, to be on here and talk about some of the great journeys that hip hop took me on throughout my life so far.
So it says you worked at KFC and saved up to get the turntables. Like, how many checks you think you had to save up before you got the turntables?
Well, back then, a 1200 was $286. So I only had to save up like 2 checks. You know what I mean? My mom bought me the other one. So then I was all set with 2 1200s. Because the first turntables I had was Pioneer S100s, straight arms, direct drive. And I had them about this far apart. One was all the way over there. One was all the way over there. Obviously, I hadn't met my man Yo-Yo yet, but he passed me such an extraordinary gift. And one good thing about him is that he was an encourager and a teacher. He got murdered in 1997, I can't bring him on the show with you actually, or let you hear any of any of his turntable wizardry techniques on how to become the best DJ. But one thing I know is that practice is essential. We make mistakes because we practice, and then we get better because we made mistakes.
Now, it says Cash Money, Jazzy Jeff, and Terminator X were like the three guys that you really took a little piece of and modeled just your, your DJing after. What was it about those three guys that they were the three you really looked up to?
Well, as I said, I told you about these mixtapes, which was really scratching tapes from the Wynn Ballroom, which was a local venue in West Philly here. And learning off of those guys, you know, there wasn't too many other, we didn't have access to anything else because it wasn't no YouTube or anything. So the tapes that we had, I took that as some special call from the universe. You know, it's exactly what I needed at the time. And I got busy with the scratching. Fast forward a little bit to my first show, which was at a place in Philly called the After Midnight. I performed there with Terminator X, with a couple, Terminator X, Public Enemy, Chuck D. A couple months before that, they dropped the album called Yo Bum Rush the Show.
Yeah.
And it was just shocking to me to hear the complete switch up in production style that Bomb Squad was putting out with a lot of noises and stuff behind it. Really crazy, really, really militant. And the DJ was especially, you know, they would highlight him doing simple cuts, which weren't so simple. You know, yeah. Rock and roll, dude, rock and roll. So it was I wanted to be like Terminator X, and I wanted to be like Jazzy Jeff, and I wanted to scratch, you know, with my stomach like DJ Cash Money. So I tried to take a little piece of all of them and make myself into, you know, who I would turn out to be.
Did you ever scratch with your stomach?
No, I'm a fat boy. I'm scratch with my stomach. I might scratch with a 9mm.
Yeah, we might gonna get to some of that later, because you definitely had a very dramatic life going through this blog and whatnot. So, like, it says you used to battle this cat Shiver, and I guess Shiver was the original DJ for Tough Crew, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Shiver was the original DJ. He scratched on the first song called Philly Style, and I used to have to get out on stage and play a record that didn't have me scratching on it. So that motivated me even more. I said, once I get my chance to do the scratches on this next Tough Crew album, which will be my first Tough Crew album,
yeah,
well, I'm gonna burn it down, you know. So I became famous for hyping myself up to burn down every 8 bars that I get a chance to scratch on.
Now,
being a DJ, you're not gonna get a chance to say anything.
Yeah, so when
you open 8 bars, you better speak with your hands, and we can take that back to Terminator X.
Now, so you basically replaced him. I guess that they saw that you were better than him and decide, hey, we getting ready to Shiver guy, and we're just gonna throw in Too Tough over here.
Yeah, Shiver faded out into the sunset. Salute to my man Shiver and a couple other DJs that faded out into the sunset along the way. I won't mention no names, so we keep it G. You know, we keep it G rated. We don't start no bullshit tonight, but I had to battle to get that position in Tough Crew, to be the other DJ of Shiver in Tough Crew. So, you know, I can just thank God for the talent that he gave me, because I never had no idea that I was going to be a, you know, a scratch DJ, some would say legendary, and have a song that initially they was calling us a one-hit wonder, but it lasted well over 40 years. So I come to find out that you only really need one hit.
Now, when you get with Tough Crew, were y'all known outside of Philly then?
No, that was an upstart. When I got with Tough Crew, they was right up the street from my house. I used to DJ out the third floor of my dad's, you know, my bedroom was on the third floor. So I would open the windows and put the PVS speakers out the windows and do my It's Time, dance to the drummer's beat, take the train, scratch practice after school. And when I would take the speakers down, it would be 7 or 8 people outside talking about, yo, he was killing that shit. You know what I mean? So I learned to love the approval of other people, and I get a charge off the cameras in my face, and I also get a charge off of the people coming up to me, you know, giving me the compliments on the unique scratch patterns, more so than me doing a crab or some kind of technical wizardry or turntable stuff, kind of stiff to me. I treat it like a guitar solo. I treat it like I'm playing a guitar. You know, okay. And it's always it's a method to the madness, but the 8 bar, you know, 8 bars, my time to shine. So I try to take advantage of the spotlight of the 8 bars.
So you joined Tough Crew. What's the process then of y'all trying to get exposure outside of Philly?
Yeah, we did a show over at Camden High with Steady B from the Hillside Hustlers. I believe Cool C was there with him as well. But it was a gentleman in the crowd named Grand Poobah. And he would become known for the boy that wrote Kick the Ball and B-Boy Document by the Crown Rulers. They appeared, both of those songs appeared on Tough Crew's first album, which was called Fan Jam. And it's a blue cover. It got me holding up a chain as a young boy with freckles on my face. And Warlock Records in New York City, who had Jungle Brothers and the Fat Boys, Tin Pan Apple Records. They had a couple, you know, subsidiaries, Adam Levy. He got wind of the Kick the Ball because it was produced by Sed G and Cool Keith Ultra Magnetic. So we got to meet Ultra Magnetic up close and personal. They came to Philly to do a show one weekend, and they never left for another month and a half. So they passed us another great skill on how to work the SP-12 and the SP-1200. And right there, our beats changed over from what was on that, you know, what was on that Fan Jam album to the next step, which was like Danger Zone, Open Field Attack, Bound to Ike, Wreck Shop, What You Don't Know. You know, the progression musically was huge for us because we didn't have drum machines that had that much sample time on it. So it was a huge open door for us to run through.
Now, so y'all get exposure, y'all pretty much get on. Was there any other groups outside of Philly then? I know there were solo artists, but was there groups?
NWA.
Out of Philly?
Oh, no, not out of Philly. Other groups out of Philly? No,
yeah, at that time.
Task Force.
Okay.
Major Figures. I mean, you could call the Hilltop Hustlers a group if you want to. Chuck Nice, Woody Wood, and EST. Steady B, Cool C. No.
Okay, but, yeah. I guess you could say, like, there's some soloists that had a group together pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't too many groups from Philly. The Mighty B-Force. There was DJ Cruz, you know, okay. Before that, Grandmasters of Funk. But, you know, we're from down Badlands, a place called Kensington. Y'all might heard about it in the news because it's a fentanyl and heroin, you know, trank epidemic going on down there. But that's where Tough Crew hails from the middle of Kensington. So we always had, you know, our posse was thick. We always had a lot of dudes with the black skull and crossbone shirts on. Some of them, we ain't even know them. They was just rocking for Tough Crew because we were screaming Northside.
That's crazy. So, were racially diverse too now. Were y'all the first racially diverse group like that?
I think so.
That's what I was thinking. I was like going through the history and I'm like, yo, was there any other racially diverse groups when y'all came out like in the mid 80s?
No, I don't think so. We led the way with showing people how to get along in the hood because we got along in all hoods. Hence, you know, we made this song called My Part of Town, but we weren't just talking about Northside. We was talking all parts of town from everybody who's screaming where they from. So it was a good play, you know. Salute to my team. I got shout out Overlord, Ice Dog, LA Kid, Tone Love. You know, if it wasn't for those bros putting me on, Monty G, making me a part of Tough Crew, giving me the freedom to build, create beats and scratch, as well as, you know, Godfather Mitch got things all hemmed up. So there was a lot of shout out to my man Rubik's DJ No Rap as well. There was a lot of Fats and Hat. They was the two boys that had the money. They was getting money on the street and they would give Mitch the money and then Mitch make the moves to get us, you know, wherever in Word Up magazine, in Source magazine, shows with Big Daddy Kane, Roxanne Shante, Milk and Giz, Positive K. So he had a real good relationship with Lady B, and Lady B is like the number one all time Philly greatest DJ. You know, she rocks the airwaves, Lady B. She also had the first song called To the Beat, Y'all, which was the first song of a female DJ rhyming.
Now, I was going to ask you about her. I'm glad you brought her up, man, because it says she was the first notable hip-hop artist out of Philly. Is that true?
Yeah, Lady B was out there long before. She opened doors for us.
So you said she was the first female DJ to rap over the mic. So, like, I heard Hollywood was, like, DJ Hollywood was one of the first guys to, like, DJ and rap over the mic. So she was, like, the female version of, like, DJ Hollywood or something?
Yeah, we would have to check the exact date. It's called To the Beat, Y'all.
I heard it was, I saw where it was like 1979. I was born in 1979.
She's still here. She's still doing the hip hop. You know, the hip hop keeps us all young.
Yeah. So y'all formed a relationship with Ultra Magnetic that you brought up earlier. Now I saw where it said if there was no Ultra Magnetic, there would never be a Tough Crew. Is that true?
Well, I mean, there was already a Tough Crew, but we're talking about in the form of the music that you hear it.
Okay.
You know, like those dope beats and that specific technique, specific sample technique, that came directly from LA Kid, myself. You know, all of the members of the Tough Crew had a hand in the production to a certain extent, but LA and myself was the ones that really, you know, did most of the beats. And the knowledge that we gained on how to work at SP12, I mean, I remember it like it was yesterday. Sitting down there with Said G. And not so long ago, I just came off tour with Said G and Ultra Magnetic and TR Love And I went to seven different countries in 18 days and visited and did things that I never possibly could imagine. You know, they were dreams. Maybe one day I could get to Europe. You know, they saying I'm a legend. Maybe one day I could get to Europe. And then, you know, and then God blesses you with it. It falls into your lap. Two things. One, I was really prepared for that, John. You know, behind the scenes, whatever my playlist was of original shit that I created that they never heard before, but it's going to bring back an idea of that tough crew shit that they did hear before, such as making an instrumental of What You Don't Know and then cutting Shut Up already over top of it. You know, all I wanted was 15 minutes in the beginning of each event. And Ultra blessed me with that 15 minutes and I took advantage of it. And then they came out there and crushed the set. So it was great for me. I had never been on a world tour, so I could put that, you know, that notch on the gun. World tour. Cool. But it was great to, it was a dream come true for real.
So I saw where it said you toured with Two Live Crew as well. Like, how wild was that tour?
Yeah, Two Live Crew had their own stuff going on. We did tour with them, but more so we was with LaJuan Love. What's the boy that sings Gotta Be Tough? I forget his name. Oh, MC Shy-D.
Okay.
Down there hanging with them. I also met Tone Loke, De La Soul, K9 Posse, which was Eddie Murphy's brother before he became a, you know, comedian. And
you talking about Charlie Murphy?
Yeah. He used to be in a group called K9 Posse.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
They had a joint called Give Them Something Military. They was on those tours, those down south tours like Savannah, Georgia, Roberto Clemente Baseball Stadium in Miami. That's we was down there with Two Live Crew, EPMD, LL was there, Tough Crew. A bunch of people were down there, man. That joint was crazy in the middle of Liberty City.
So being in the midst of down there, that's how y'all ended up doing these shows with Tone Loke and De La Soul, where it says the money wasn't coming correct. Was that like kind of the start of problems with the group?
Yeah, well, we were young. So when a genre is first being born, as hip hop was just being originated at that point, not only was there not that many rules, but we definitely didn't know the rules of the per se music business. We just knew that we wanted to rhyme. You know, we liked the crowd. We love making beats. I love the scratch. And somehow all of that managed to mesh together into a group. And then we made a few songs and we got a taste of going to New York. Again, through Ultra Magnetic, we went to Latin Quarters, seen them perform. I met Kango Kid and DJ Red Alert. And a lot of significant stuff happened that I could never chalk it up to just coincidence, you know? So it's been an amazing ride, to be honest with you.
Now, Philly hip hop, a lot of artists came out of Philly. I mean, a lot of artists. Do you feel like Philly gets enough credit for all it's done in hip hop?
Yeah, I think Philly has cemented its place in the hip hop world. Even, you know, we got State Property, Beans, Free, Petey. Before that, you had Tough Crew. Now, you know, Meek Mills. We got Lil Durk. You know, it goes on and on and on and on. You know, and then there's a whole underground scene that might not be on BET from Philly. Philly, all, and that's the South. That go for Jersey as well, and a Delaware as well. You know, because that tri-state area is kind of like all Philly. So we rock with people from Delaware. We rock with South Jersey, North Jersey. You know, North Jersey is more like New York. But hey, nowadays we over here collaborating. Ain't nobody hating because of what city or what part of town you from. We all collaborating to try to get larger.
And y'all got the biggest rapper turned actor in Will Smith. I mean, he literally is, out of all the guys that went from rapping to acting, I would have to say Will Smith is the top dog.
Yeah, well, he went through the stratosphere. Superstar.
Now, how do you feel about the modern day Philly rappers?
I fuck with the modern day Philly rappers because it's a whole scene that really nobody might not know about. We can start that out with A.R.A.B.
Okay.
Freedom Men, O.B.H. You know, we got to include O.T. The Real in the mix. I DJ for O.T. The Real. I went on tour with Benny the Butcher and seen things that I, you know, pack houses of gangster Griselda, smoke in the air shit. So shit was incredible. You know, there's a lot of rappers from Philly, Freeway, Beans. You know what I mean? This is the new school from Philly. I pay attention. I pay attention to all the new rappers. They feature with each other. You know what I mean? I found out that when I tapped in with the younger generation by creating and playing on my mix show on Rap Station for Chuck D, playing drill and trap, I found like that made me younger. That brought me a younger demographic, and it evened out the, you know, Tough Crew, Boom Bap, because some of those dudes, they ain't feeding into the young bullshit. They call it mumble rap or whatever. But it's a lot of progression, and it's a chronological progression of how hip hop is gonna, you know, evolve. We can't keep it the same because hip hop wasn't the same before we did ours. So how are we gonna limit young boys on how they doing hip hop when nobody tried to limit us? So it's just a steady growth, man. Hip hop forever.
Yeah, because the 80s and 90s didn't exactly sound alike. Once you got to like the 94, about 93, 94, I think the sound just really, really started changing. And the way people were sampling was just really getting crazy ridiculous.
Yeah.
Now,
well, I'm a sample boy, so I'm all for it.
I always got to ask DJs this. I've interviewed a few DJs on this show. Why do you think the DJ has been kind of like taken out of the group element?
I don't know. I mean, if you really look at it, Khaled is a DJ, so he hasn't been taken out of the element. Only the scratching part in people's songs maybe has been taken out of the element, because the same way that I figured out that I need to be more than just a DJ in the background scratching, because that doesn't seem like, maybe for me, because I was an instrumental part of my part of town and they all do the air scratches, but that's not every DJ. Every DJ is not going to be able to put on some type of groundbreaking shit that lasts for 35 years. And I didn't even know I was going to do it. So we got to develop more of a personality. I got to be able to come on here and do interviews with you and tell you other stories to make my character, which is also me as an artist, a little bit more appealing and more relevant to 2025. You know what I mean? Because we can only talk about stories that happened in 1989 for so long before we start running out of stories. Everybody wasn't even born in 1989. So we need to make up new stories. And it's good to be around. It's good to be healthy. It's good to have a fresh new year to make some great moves with. Shout out to Mr. Chuck D for putting me on deck with Spit Slam Records. I dropped 2 albums on that joint last year. Shout out to the whole soup kitchen. My man OT The Real put the motherfucking jumper cables on my back and charged my whole career up. And especially shout out to Ultra Magnetic MCs for allowing me to see the entire universe, you know, in 18 days. And of course, you know, my original squad, Tough Crew, that's the backbone of the whole thing for me. If it wouldn't have been for the experience that I had with them, you know, and we got one up the sleeve. We got a United Kingdom Tough Crew tour coming up in 2025. I'm gonna take my team out to the UK. You know what I mean? We're gonna burn the stage down in a couple of different places like Leeds, Manchester, London, Birmingham, Bristol. Yeah, that sounds good, right? That's how we manifest.
Now, do you think that a lot of DJs might have had trouble adapting to this internet world?
Yeah, the older DJs. Everybody, some people don't want to learn how to use an iPhone. You know, some people may be technically challenged. I mean, if you're a DJ and you're technically challenged, I understand, to each his own, but maybe this is not the sport for you, because this one seems to have elevated technologically a lot. You know, because I use the Phase DJ Jones.
Okay.
You know, sometimes they'll just not work. So maybe the average person might not know you got to do a firmware update and a bunch of other stuff. Everybody is not an internet, you know, sleuth on how to solve problems on their own stuff. But you know, the real ones is going to do the work. The real ones is going to put in the time to be prepared. Everybody's desire is not to be a Grammy award winning DJ / personality. You know, maybe like I am, some people just want to be a DJ as a hobby, you know, same with rappers. Yeah. Some rappers aren't looking to make a platinum selling album, and some are, you know.
Now, going through this long blog on Medium, you've had a very dramatic life. Is that the way I could say it? Dramatic? Is that the right word?
Yeah, unpredictable, dramatic. Sounds good.
Now, are you willing to talk about any of that? Because I saw, like, before I bring up, are you willing to talk about any of that?
Yeah, anything on the table, man.
Okay, so I saw, like, is this true? I saw where you were involved in a kidnapping and you were kidnapped. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true.
That's about as dramatic as it gets, right?
Yeah, I had a friend that I used to work for, our second boy in charge, and he wanted to go to Phoenix, Arizona, because I had gone to Phoenix, Arizona a couple of times to do a couple of things with some Jamaicans.
Okay.
Now he wanted to connect, so he's a forceful boy. He's talking about, just come outside for a little bit. I just want to talk to you. I was like, bro, come outside. I said, I got my bedroom slippers on, bro. From there, we going for 19 days. Drove to Phoenix, Arizona. I got dropped off on the side of the road in Nashville, Tennessee. He came back, picked me up in a different car. Yeah, it was always some wild shit with this boy. His name was Dino. He had a studio in Kensington called Sunrise Studios. And, you know, he was a hustle boy, get money boy. And the studio stayed open for maybe a year and a half, and then he sold it. But it was always some kind of, you know, for the time that I wasn't too tough, it's kind of because I took a job that I didn't have a way to get out of. And although the money was lucrative, there didn't seem to be an exit plan. And even when I did think I had an exit plan, you know, none of my cars started that day. When I executed the first day of the exit plan, sabotage maneuvers started to pop up in my life. So, you know, I didn't have a solution for it then. But since then, I found a solution that's ultimately better than running around in the streets, you know, ducking and dodging, trying not to get killed.
It also said, like, you let somebody loan them some, like, two crates of records for a car, and then it comes to find out that it's stolen. Like, whatever happened with your record crates?
Did you ever get
those back?
Yeah, I got the crates back. There was it's an area in Kensington called McVeigh Playground, and they called it a swoop troop. So I knew one of the boys, and he had a car. He said, I'm DJing a party. Let me hold, you know, a couple crates of records. I'll let you hold my car. I said, all right. But I didn't know the car was stolen when he gave it to me. But he got the crates of records and what da da da. So now the same day he gave it to me, later on that night, the car stops running, like the transmission just died. So I left it in the middle of the street on Oriana Street, and we called him. And he was playing the ducking game and all of that. He was probably scared because, you know, of course, you didn't tell me that the car was stolen. So that's the first ass whooping that you're going to get. But when I didn't know where to find him at, and he still had my records and all of that. So I called the gas company, and I told him that, you know, his name. I told him my name is his name, acted like him. And they were like, oh, you mean this person? I said, I want to pay the bill. I just came back from on college, you know, spring break. I'm home, and I want to pay the bill because it's been running for some time. This is my name, and this is this is the address. And they were like, this one of whatever. So then we went straight to his crib. You know, we got the records back. It wasn't no type of crimes committed in getting the records back. But it was just another one of the roundabouts.
You know, speaking of crates, like, okay, do you prefer the way it is now, where you don't gotta have crates, or would you like it to still go back to crates?
No, I like it much better how it is now. When I travel, all I gotta do is bring a laptop, a couple flats, a couple hard drives, two terabyte hard drive, my phases, headphones, and some wax, you know.
So it was really a lot of work back then with all the crates.
Yeah, carrying all of that around. It's not feasible today. You're not going to be able to carry no crate. I mean, there's still DJs, obviously, that play vinyl.
Yeah.
But with a limited amount of crates, you know, limited amount of stuff on what they're going to do. I recently seen Tony Touch. Tony Touch was playing off of Toronto, but I recently seen a Large Professor play off of 45s. You know what I mean? And we got a couple of DJs that are really good on 45s in Philly as well. One is named Scheme Richards.
Uh-huh.
And the other boy's named DJ Doodles. Also, Doodles. You know, DJ Wax Spinner. You know what I mean? They all play with them 45s.
Now, do you feel like DJs support other DJs more than like rappers support other rappers?
Definitely. Yeah, the DJs is a close-knit community. Everybody wants to see everybody else get off. You know,
yeah.
We want to watch each other, and then it's a big talk gossip scene in Philly. You know what I mean? Everybody talking about everybody in the DJ thing, DJ scene, but it ain't about no hatred. Because we all see each other at these local events where they bring all the New York artists, whether it be at the, you know, the Dell Music Center or another place, you know. Everybody in Philly is a pretty much tight-knit group when it comes to the DJ scene.
So I want to ask your opinion on a somewhat controversial question. I mean, we get a lot of traction off these clips with this Puerto Rican and hip hop thing, but that ain't what I want to ask you about. What's your opinion on white guys being guests in hip hop?
Well, I was there from the inception. It wasn't a choice that I made to try to talk the way that you hear me talking, or try to create the music, you know, good or bad. That was just part of the path, you know?
Yeah.
When I originally DJed at the After Midnight, the crowd was chanting Soul Man. When I got done, they was chanting Soul Man. So we leave it up to what we leave it up to. But I can tell you this. Early on, mm-hmm. I wasn't sure how I was going to become black enough to be a hip-hop DJ. So I have, you know, some reservations.
Okay.
Practice and work on. It just so happened that I grew up in the hood. Those reservations were unfounded when I got the approval of, you know, if you do the work, you're going to get good. You know what I mean? There's mm-hmm. no such thing as, you know, you have the desire to be a guitar player. You practice playing the guitar every day. The result is you get good. Same with the DJ stuff. If you're passionate about something and you take the small steps each day consistently, you're going to improve. That's how the human mind works. Now, some people have a greater capacity to push themselves maybe and practice more. Some would call them a gym rat. I always been a gym rat in the turntable room, gym rat, whatever. You know, maybe I have a obsessive or addictive personality. Well, obviously I do, because I had to work my way back out of the mud on some other things. But, you know, it's always good to have a good passion, a good addiction, you know, to setting your goals. Maybe not so much where you kill yourself with the perfectionism as sometimes I used to, but now take it easy a little bit. We're just going to let it flow. I learned a lot from different artists, especially I learned a lot from a kid named Thorough215. I got to sit in the studio with him and for both of my albums and a few remixes for Spit Slam. Anything that we did, that I did with Spit Slam, included Thorough as the final go-to boy, you know, mixing and mastering and editing and stuff like that. So I learned a lot about how to let the music breathe instead of scratching continuously through the whole track, which is me, you know, because I told you I'm the eight. Now, you know, if I'm the 8-bar killer, right now they say, okay, I'm going to give you an opportunity to do a whole album. So, you know, I'm just stacking 8 bars behind 8 bars, killing every 8 bar. It's a little too much. We're going to have to learn how to breathe in between there. And then I learned a lot from other people who I was lucky enough to interact with musically.
Now, 50th anniversary of hip hop, they had a lot of celebrations in a lot of different areas. Were you involved with any of these celebrations going on?
I went up to we went to the Bronx, to the Zulu Nation Hip Hop Museum.
Okay. This,
it wasn't the big museum because that hadn't opened yet, but this one was in the side. Maybe it was in Jerton. No, it was in the Bronx. It was in New York. But as far as like 50th anniversary, in Philly, Charlie Mack threw a show called Mixtape Live.
Okay.
And then 50 different hip-hop groups all on one stage in Atlantic City with Jazzy Jeff as the DJ. So that was like history came all the way around back to the beginning, because I found myself on stage with a mic in my hand and up and pointed at Jazzy Jeff, and he pointed back at me. So well, I had Jazzy Jeff as my DJ for that event, and so did Tough Crew. And that was a switch around for me.
Well, didn't they say Jazzy Jeff invented like transforming or something like that?
Yeah, we all had a hand in putting a lot of different things together. You know, I'm not exactly sure who the inventor of it is. I know we had a kid from North Philly named Lightning Rich. Okay. Shout out to my man DJ Cook, main man Cook. This boy named Lightning Rich was vicious. He just wasn't as popular as all of the other DJs. And you know, even though they weren't popular where I'm saying they had records or vinyl out, but just popular as far as, you know, actually doing shows. There was a place in North Philly called the Blackout, and I seen Lightning Rich performing at the Blackout, but it was a lot different in North Philly maybe than it is to be in Center City, you know, where it's an actual venue. These ones was like basically big house parties. But Lightning Rich, I don't even know if you could Wikipedia Lightning Rich and find out anything about him, but rest in peace, Lightning Rich. He was a big influence on me because that was the third dude. They had a lot of different tapes out with him scratching that we learned from in 84, 85, 86, 87.
Now, you had some solos, if I'm not mistaken, right? Like
solo
albums?
Yeah. My first solo album was called Behold the Debt. Actually, my first solo album was on Rough Nation, just released double vinyl, called DJ Two Tough's Lost Archives, and that features 19 songs that I did from 1991 to 1993 after the breakup of Tough Crew. You can find that online, all platforms, everywhere, and it's on vinyl. After that, I got a deal 2 years ago, in 2022, 3 years ago, with Chuck D. My first album that I released on Spit Slam is called Behold the Detonator.
Okay. Features,
the mixing and mastering by Thorough 215, production by Obvious Bane, Rapid Fire, a zillion records, DJ Brown Bum. And then after that, I did a joint called Me Versus Me. So this is the first time that I had ever done solo albums. And some of the ideas that I used to kind of try to like pay homage or pay it forward, I use like clips from OT to Real. If you burn us, then it's guns first. You know what I mean? So it would show and pay off that later on, I went on tour as his DJ on the Everybody Can't Go tour, Black Soprano Family Records. But this song that I made was way before it was even any kind of, you know, innuendos that I might be able to become somebody's DJ. I was just rocking on the sideline, you know what I mean? Paying attention, showing up at video shoots.
You say you got tours coming up. Are y'all going to be making any music under the Tough Crew name ever again?
Well, we just dropped the album called Back by Dope Demand on Rough Nation. It's on YouTube. It's also on vinyl through MVD Entertainment. There's a new video for My Part of Town for that remake. So that joint got we got Petey Crack on there. We got Boy Bax from Ram Squad on there. So that joint is out now. Tough Crew, that was the first album that we created as a group with our own production in 33 years.
And when did that drop?
That dropped 2023, last year.
2023, okay.
Oh, yeah, at the end of 23. It's called Back by Dope Demand.
And so there ain't no ill will between anybody in the group anymore, right?
No, we all tied. Hey, we went over Europe and burned down Amsterdam and Urban Matters. First time I ever went over Europe was with my crew. I'm really happy about that I could go over there and share an overseas experience with the boys that I originally got into the group with. Because everybody's not always able to make the major moves or the minor moves every day that it takes to do maybe what I've tried to accomplish. And I by no means have done it by myself. It's been a whole team of people that give of themselves and really don't ask for anything in return to try to make the Too Tough next move be all that it can be. And I, you know, Smoke and Choke podcast, you know, I got to thank a lot of different people, Grizzly Bear, Nomad, a lot of people doing work behind the scenes, Jay Zotos in New York.
So what are all the group members doing, like basically when they're not like making music and stuff?
everybody got their own lives. I ain't going to disclose, you know, what certain people in the crew do. Maybe we get them to come on, and then we could get their opinion of it. Because now that we got the one going, we might as well bring the whole team on.
Yeah.
Because they tell you different versions, you know, of the Tough Crew story than I will, because my perception is only coming from what I saw. Everybody got a different vision of what they saw. And it's good to get the vision from Tone Love, get the vision from Ice Dog, get the vision from LA Kid, and then myself, and then Monty G, you know, and then you get more of a rounded picture.
Now, you said you grew up in the Badlands of Philly. Being a white dude, was it any tougher?
Well, I hustled down there in Kensington. Kensington is the area where most of the white dudes is crazy as fuck anyway. Early on, that was an all white area.
Okay.
Sometimes if you were non-white, you might get chased home from school. Cause I often heard stories when I was a young boy, of my friends telling me, yo, them white boys chased us home from school. They was throwing bottles at us and everything. So now you see, I'm on the other side.
Yeah.
Where it's more mixed.
Yeah.
So they them white boys. Now I've assumed that now I've been accepted on this side. So now I can call white boys too. Yo, fuck them white boys. You know what I mean? Not realizing that other people are looking at me like, dude, you're white too. You know what I mean? But nowadays in the music situation, the color really doesn't play into it, because everybody, you know, there's rappers of all different shades and colors. And to be honest with you, even in the beginning of hip hop, the color situation really never came into play in any of those parties, like the Fresh Fest or Run DMC, Public Enemy, and the Beastie Boys, or you know, Leak Moss or Skrilla or any of the trap, you know, Benny the Butcher, Griselda, Wu-Tang Clan. It's all different types of people. So hip hop is universal. It doesn't even go with the skin color part.
So you rocking the Raiders. Does that have something to do with NWA, like their influence?
Yeah, well, you know, I like the Raiders for real. I read a book called They Call Me Assassin, and it was about an old Oakland Raider named Jack Tatum. And he paralyzed a dude from the New England Patriots named Daryl Stingley, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't happy about, you know, somebody being paralyzed. That's not what it was, but it was just such a... It was gritty and it was grimy and it was the Raiders and they played dirty and the Raiders were an NFL team that if somebody else got cut from the team for fighting or doing drugs or smoking weed or crashing their car, the Raiders picked them up as a reclamation project, you know. And me being in somewhat of a some precarious situations in my life, it always seemed like I was a reclamation project, even to myself. When the Raiders played the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl, I had my number one green finger and I had my green cowboy hat cheering for the Eagles, and the Raiders demolished them, stomped all over them. That was another sign from the universe that I should don the silver and black as my you know, my theme dress. This is like my NWA gangster costume, but it's become synonymous with Too Tough and Tough Crew, because we wore Raiders gear in performances with Luke Skywalker, Live Crew, and all of that. So they always ask us, y'all from LA? And we'd be like, no. They'd be like, oh, why y'all wear Raiders gear? And, you know, it's a little involved story. It also got to do with the Raiders motto, which is commitment to excellence.
Okay.
I had a guy named MC Mechanism, who appeared on Back to Rec Shop on the song called Come On and Go Off, Mechanism. He was my MC before I was even the DJ for Tough Crew. So he kind of got put to the side when I became the DJ at Tough Crew. And then we went back and got him and featured him on a couple of joints. I did a few songs, a lot of songs with him. One thing that we used to do, which I don't know if that article speaks about, we used to drive around the year 1988-89. So I got a hit record. My Part of Town is playing on the radio all over. But in Philly, we drive around to every drug corner with a copybook, and we ask them if they want us to make a mixtape for them, a song talking about them, talking about their corner, because it was a lot of different corners. Like, it's drug corners in North Philly, not Crips and Bloods, but each individual block got their own little set. You know what I mean? So there was with Mechanism, I made about 40 or 50 songs for all of those drug corners. And I made a nice amount of money making actual songs, not just mixtapes with other people's music on it, which I also did that as well. But these ones were tailor-made with the original beat and all of that. Some of those drug dealer songs, we used to call them Posse Alert, they appear on the Lost Archives. And I had a group called Straight Business as well from Chester. And a lot of those Lost Archives and Lost Archives Part 2, which are both on vinyl and both available on all platforms right now. You could just go on YouTube and put in DJ Toots of Lost Archives and you're going to get two, Part 1 and Part 2. But a lot of those people who I thought I was only going to meet to make the beat for them, and then that would be that, they became lifelong friends of mine. So shout out to my man Shuja, Class B, Melly Page, Jack with a Bear, everybody from Chester, my man Obvious Bane.
I'm glad you brought up My Part of Town. I knew there was a question that I forgot to ask. So that song was actually peaked at 23 on the Billboard's Hot Rap Singles. What was the feeling like when that song peaked, basically a top 25 rap record at the time?
Yeah, it was awesome. It's great to hear your song played on the radio. That one was more significant because it led to the creation of Back to Rec Shop, the album where we kind of knew we might not get immediate money off of My Part of Town, but we knew that would lead into a bonus, some type of signing bonus for the next album, which was Back to Rec Shop. Now, I can tell you that all of those dreams of getting rich and all of that, that didn't happen for the members of Tuff Crew, but it did happen for somebody, maybe Adam Levy, you know, and to this day, it's not like, you know, trillions and trillions of dollars like somebody's eating off of the Tuff Crew name still. But I would go to say that the catalog that Tuff Crew built stands the test of time for ourselves beyond any kind of they paid us or they didn't pay us. We had the opportunity to perform at so many different locations, so many different cities, so many different countries. I've had the opportunity to talk to people that told me so many different lifetime stories about what they were doing when My Part of Town was banging. Everybody got a certain memory about what was going on in their life to that song, My Part of Town. So I often thought that maybe I could write a book of excerpts from the fan base called My Part of Town. I mean, it might be a good idea just as a outline format, you know?
So we're going to be hitting this hour mark here real soon. And I usually wrap it up at hour mark because Instagram will kind of kick us off after an hour sometimes. But
it's all good.
When people think of DJ Too Tough, how do you want to be remembered in hip-hop culture?
Well, I think that for me, I try to bring good energy to the situation. I try to see what I can bring into the situation instead of worrying about what I'm going to get out of the situation.
Okay.
By the time I'm engaged and we said, yes, I'm going to show up and I'm going to be Too Tough in whatever capacity that you hired me for, whether it's a Sweet 16, you know, birthday party, or it's a European tour with Ultra Magnetic. My job is to come and bring good energy. My second job is to overcome any obstacles that might present themselves along the way. The first way that I can overcome obstacles is by being prepared. If you're a DJ, have your playlist, have your set list, know about the drivers for the mixers that you're going to use when you go into each individual venue. They might, unless you're carrying around your mixer, which I'm not, then you need to be aware that you might have to do some tinkering and adjusting. You know, don't get all bent out of shape if everybody's not bowing down to your every whim and some things are not as they should be. The sound man was my best friend through every one of these shows that I did with OT in Southampton, London at Chip Shop and with Ultra. The sound man is always a DJ's best friend because he's going to help you work over the rough spots. And then, you know, the interactions with the crowd. I know that a lot of people that I used to message on Facebook when I went to Europe and all of those countries and cities and countries that I didn't know anybody in those countries. Well, it sure seemed like I knew a lot of people there because there was a line of people with Tuff Crew records for me to autograph at the end of the show. And that made me feel really good, man. Shout out to my man Hans from Urban Matters, who brings me over there every year to Helmond, a little city in the Netherlands. He was the one that took a chance to bring Tuff Crew over to perform after, you know, a 33-year hiatus. And we came out there, and we did really well, you know, And it's been moving along ever since. My prime locations are in Europe, you know, and I've been over there in 2024. I went over there a bunch of different times, you know. Sometimes I forget that all of that happened in 1 year because it was like had my neck breaking, man. Very grateful though, man.
Do you think the international scene is at this point is always gonna appreciate, I guess we could say, nostalgic hip hop more than the U.S. going forward?
Most definitely. All of those places love the golden era hip hop. And a lot of the people over there still, you know, create music, some for a hobby, some for their own label. Because the 7-inch scene, a 7-inch record on vinyl is big over there. So sometimes artists make their songs and put it on a 7-inch. And just like we used to hustle mixtapes, they hustle vinyl at the shows over there. Because everybody overseas or everybody in Europe and the UK seem to be of the ilk that they want to put the needle to the record in their house and play it. Of course, they're also going to buy it on their phone to listen to while they're driving and stuff like that. But maybe it's the nostalgic aspect of hearing the warmth of the vinyl to the diamond tip needle, you know?
I got one more question before we go. Like, when you transition from like records, mixing on records, and you go to something like Serato, is there like a adjustment period, and does it ever affect your scratching at all?
Well, when I was using, I still use Serato, but I don't use the control vinyl. I use Phase DJ, which is two remotes that operate by GPS. And they link to my turntables. And I've had zero problems with them joints, except maybe sometimes the battery runs out. But as far as me being able to scratch exactly like if I was using a record, yes. Mm. Yes. So it was life-saving for me, not only because all of my records from back in the day got stolen by the same boy, kidnapped me. You know what I mean? Also, my records was gone after the whole situation. That was just an L all the way around. But I was able to get back any song that I want. And the best part about it was I didn't have to pay for it, you know, because we had LimeWire and we had all of the free downloads.
Yeah, I remember.
And all that shit. So it let me catch back up quick when I was still in the midst of, you know, fighting a couple of demons in my life that weren't allowing me to maybe, you know, get to a point where I could get over to Europe. I was just trying to get to a point where I could get out of the streets.
All right, we're about to hit that hour mark. Before we go, anybody you want to shout out?
Yeah, man. Love and light to everybody out there that represented the Tough Crew name. Everybody that I met in person overseas. DR, Seth G, Cool Keith, Rapid Fire, Ice Dog, LA Kid, Tone Love, my man Jux Money. And especially to you, man, because I had a great time here tonight. Shout out to my sponsor, Pat Z. Had a great
Appreciate
time here.
It.
And shout out to Vietnam, man. The whole Vietnam, man.
Y'all been through Vietnam before?
No, I want to come through.
Yeah, it's Fayetteville, North Carolina. We got our name from Vietnam back in the days because we got the 82nd Airborne out here. So,
okay.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time out, man. You're more than welcome to come back on and definitely reach out to the crew and see what's up. We try to get everybody on at once.
Yup, that'll be a good look. Hey, look, follow me on all platforms at DJ TOOTUFF at DJ Too Tough everywhere.
Appreciate you, man. And I'm going to definitely keep in touch, man. You a friend of the show, man, going forward.
Likewise as well, man. I wish you a happy new year and blessings throughout the new year, bro. I look forward
you
to
you too.
Back.
All right, peace, man.
Peace, brother.
Well, there we have it. First interview of the year, 2025. DJ Too Tough and the Tough Crew. They came out like 85. I mean, they rocked for a hot minute. Touring overseas. Still doing their thing. And Too Tough, from what I gather from a lot of the DJs, that he's one of the nicest dudes on the turntables. From what I heard, the scratches are really, really sick, man. Tomorrow we got music reviews. I don't know what time I'm going to do music reviews. Make sure y'all submit live from Vietnam at gmail.com if you want your music reviewed. Make sure you submit MP3s only, no links, MP3s only. And I'll probably go live about 2 p.m., 3 p.m. Eastern time. Appreciate anybody tuning in, everybody that commented. Another episode of Live from Vietnam in the books. And we got a bunch of interviews still coming up. Hold on, let me go through some of the interviews. We got Phantasm of the Cellar Dwellers. We got Cool Kim from the UMCs, not the Ultra Magnetic MCs, but Cool Kim from the UMCs. And I booked Young Bleed. We got Young Bleed on the 17th. We got Phantasm on the 31st. We got Cool Kim of the UMCs the 15th. And I normally don't go live on Thursdays or Wednesdays, but we're gonna start accommodating some of these people and going live on those days. And I'm also gonna be trying to bring in at least one unsigned or local artist every month for an interview. Appreciate y'all tuning in to another episode. Peace, and I'm out.